Devices Radio Network.
Drugs and Stuff is for informational and educational purposes only, and this program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES. Hey, what's up, guys, and welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. If you are watching this on YouTube, this is the Think Big Bodybuilding Media channel. If you're listening on iTunes, like the majority of our followers have, then you are listening to the Advices Radio Network, or of course at advicesradio.com too. What is up, Dave Crossland? We put out an episode last week, but that was recorded pre-Olympia. I haven't even spoke to you since the Olympia has happened, man. It's been a little while. How you been?
All right. Bit of a mixed bag. Some people will be aware of this individual, but I would suspect a lot of the people stateside may not. A disabled strongman athlete and bodybuilder actually called Darren Stansby. Darren's been a friend of mine for several years. He was diagnosed with cerebral ataxia quite some years ago. In fact, his original prognosis would have had him deceased 7 years ago.
Oh, my God.
In that time, he has competed World's Strongest Disabled Man. He's competed as a bodybuilder. He's competed in America. He competed at the Arnold a couple of years ago.
Oh, no kidding. I would have been there then when he was there.
And he was, well, I'll tell you a little story about that. When he gets ataxia attacks, every nerve ending in his body goes into spasm. Every muscle goes into spasm, and every nerve ending sends pain signals.
Holy shit.
And this often actually results in his brain just completely shutting down.
Wow.
In order to protect him, because the pain signal overload is so strong.
Okay.
And he will pass in and out of consciousness several times. His condition is degenerative, and in real layman's terms, his brain is dying and rotting from the inside.
Oh, my God.
So he had no speech node in his brain. That had gone. That completely disintegrated. But he was still able to talk. But when he did have an attack, one of his early symptoms was eyesight or speech would go.
Okay.
Anyway, he was unable to do the stones at the Arnold's a couple of years ago because he'd had an attack. So that evening, when everybody had gone and there was only like organizers and event staff about, he wheeled himself back into the arena and started doing the stones just on his own.
Really?
Because he wanted to do them. He wanted to complete. He wanted to finish.
Wow.
Now, over this year, he had a period of where he was particularly bad and he was effectively in a coma. He was at home, but he was in a coma for 10 weeks, maybe even slightly longer. And three times in that time, I got a phone call to say he wouldn't make it through the night. And then one day, he just woke up. And when they did his brain scans, they found that his activity had completely moved. And the doctors could only explain it that his brain had rebooted itself and started to use other areas to compensate for the areas that weren't working anymore.
I'll be damned. Wow.
I mean, he'd been wheelchair bound for some time. And he looked like he was going to beat it again. I mean, the amount of times he's come back. He was probably about 3 years ago, he did a 400 kilo deadlift. Some people may be familiar with the wheelchair deadlift, but basically what happens is your legs are strapped to a bench. The bar is set up underneath the bench. You lean forward, you grab the bar, and then you pull yourself upright.
Okay.
So it's all lower back and core. There's no hip drive because your hips are immobilized. It's all lower back and core.
Yeah.
And he was the first person to do 400 kilo.
400 kilo, basically what's like it equates to, that's insane, man, without any kind of hip or low back movement hip or leg hamstring movement to help pull that up.
And that's with a total body weight of 86 kilos.
Wow.
He was in intensive care for 2 weeks after that lift.
Oh my God.
And his ears bled for 4 days.
Wow.
He was, to be honest, he was just a stubborn arsehole that would not give up. In the best of ways, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You very rarely heard him moan, very rarely heard him ever complain.
Okay.
He just got on with it. Anyway, he passed about 2 weeks ago now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
His funeral's actually on Thursday. And he's actually getting buried in his gym gear, and that's how significant it was in his life.
Wow.
But I remember how he first started lifting weights. He played rugby, and he was a salesman for BMW. And he kept collapsing on the rugby pitch like he was drunk. Hmm. That's the way you can describe the sensation was that he felt drunk. Anyway, they diagnosed him with cerebral ataxia, and he was in hospital. And he's laid there in bed. At this point, he's wheelchair bound. His legs are no longer working. He can't control his legs anymore. He's allowed by his wheelchair to leave the hospital and do stuff, but he must return to the hospital on an evening and spend his nights there to be monitored and everything else. So he calls a taxi, gets in the taxi with his wheelchair, tells the taxi to take him to a local gym. Taxi driver does, puts him back in his wheelchair, and he says, you know, you're going to be all right. He says, yeah. And he goes to the gym and goes to try and open the door, and he's not strong enough to pull the door open.
Oh, wow.
So he smashes his wheelchair into the door repetitively until the owner comes and opens the door for him. So he wheels in, and the owner's like, well, how can I help you? And he says, I want to start training. And he looks at him and says, you don't look very well, mate. Do you think you should really be here? So he sort of explained what was going on. And the guy disappeared into a cupboard and came out with a broom handle and gave him that and said, when you can lift that 10 times above your head, you can have a real bar.
Hmm. Okay.
And at that point, he couldn't even lift a broom handle 10 times above his head.
Oh, my gosh.
Fast forward.
Wait, that's cool, though. The gym owner took some interest in him, and he didn't just say, like, you know, okay, go for it. You know what I mean? Or he didn't kick him out. He wasn't just like, here, okay, cool, let me take your money, A. Or B, he wasn't like, get the hell out of here, you're a liability. He actually worked with him and gave him something to actually challenge him. That's awesome.
And that was the start of his bodybuilding and strongman career.
Jeez. And then to fast forward, you said 420 kilos?
No, just 400 kilos.
400 kilos, man. That's ridiculous. That's a lot of weight, you know, especially under those conditions. I can't even imagine that. I have to look around to see if I can find video of that. There's got to be a video of it.
There is. It was done in the O2 Arena, one of the Giants live competitions.
Okay.
So he's unfortunately passed, and then a very good friend of mine, daughter, committed suicide a couple of weeks ago. Well, about a week ago.
Gosh, Dave, you're having a rough swing at things here.
Hey, I'm not. It seems everyone else around me, maybe it's just not a good idea to know me at the moment. But
well, hey, I have some good news for you.
Good, go on.
Yeah, so, you know, do you remember a while ago we had said that we didn't have any female listeners?
Yes.
Yeah. So it turns out that this is not true. We actually do. As I mentioned, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk since I've been back from the Olympia. And while we were out there, there's the Meet the Olympians, and we're walking around, and Victoria happens to know this woman who is going to be in the show, Martina Yabakova. She's a figure competitor. She's competing in the Olympia. She happens to be friends with Victoria, and Victoria sees her, and they say hi and everything. And then she turns to me and she says, I wanted to tell you that you guys do have at least one female listener. She said, I listen to every show that you guys do. She said, I love the show. So we actually have a female listener. It's probably because she doesn't know how to find anything else on the internet that's worthwhile. And she's got to do like an hour of cardio every day. That's my guess. She just like, she doesn't have Netflix or something. So
this shit's better than nothing.
No, seriously though, she was a big fan of the shows, and I thought that was really cool. So I wanted to tell you about that personally and to give Martina a shout out, because she looked freaking amazing. She looked really hard, and she has really nice shape to her too. So I just wanted to mention to you that because I thought that was surprising. I didn't, like I said, Dave, we didn't think we had any female listeners. We just figured it was like all bros, you know, gym rat bros, maybe like a couple guys that compete, stuff like that. But yeah, so that's that news, man. And I've been adding a little food back in. That was the other thing I wanted to tell you about. I've been adding a little bit of food back in. I got the True Nutrition flavored oatmeal. And so I usually train after meal one. And what I started doing is I'll eat my meal one. And then when I'm ready to go to the gym about an hour later, I'll eat one cup of that oatmeal along with some whey protein and then head straight into the gym. It's basically like an intra workout for me, you know, because those carbs aren't going to be like intra, you know, ultra fast acting. They're going to be digesting for a while. And I feel like my pumps are pretty incredible. And because I've built up some good insulin sensitivity, it's been working out pretty solid for me, man. I'm definitely getting the most out of it. The other thing I noticed, water, the difference in water. If I'm not hydrated enough and then I eat those oats, I don't get nearly the pump, man. I feel like, you know, you see all the guys that are walking around with the gallon jugs and everything. And it's almost like a fashion statement. And then I've seen people swing the other direction. Like my partner VJ for Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, he was like, you know, I don't really believe in water. You just drink if you're thirsty. You don't need any more than that. But realistically, when you're drinking when you're consuming a lot of carbs, you know, you're eating a lot of food, you need that fluid to deliver that stuff to the muscle. And I can, like I said, man, I can tell a huge difference in my pump if I'm super hydrated versus if I'm just as hydrated as like an average person would be.
No, I agree. I used to always consume very large amounts of water. My problem was I didn't always get it where I wanted it, but that was part of my kidney condition, which at that time was undiagnosed. So obviously didn't realize that was the issue. But no, I'm a great believer in hydration and high water levels, definitely. High salt as well, which a lot of people tend to steer away from. But
that's a mistake.
Sodium's used massively in contractile strength, so it's always advisable to make sure there's plenty in there.
Do you actually go out of your way? Yeah.
I haven't eaten for 24 hours.
What?
I know. Forgot.
Are you fasting or something?
No, I just forgot.
You forgot?
Yeah.
I know you've been busy. You just got out of your meeting, and I was at the gym, and you're like, okay, yeah, I'll go grab a bite. I was like, I'll be home in 40 minutes. I'll be set to go. And you're like, okay, I'll go get a bite to eat. What is that?
That's potatoes.
And why aren't you eating them? Why haven't you eaten them?
I'm doing them. Slowly.
Very professional on the show.
I know. I've learned from the best.
Hey, I finished eating before we started, but I had to, I didn't want to sacrifice the gains.
Yeah, but you still plug in your coffee mug. Watch it. In a week, it'll be on the website for sale. Think big mugs.
We have some questions here, Dave. So, guys, we could use some more, though. So, you know, we record the show whenever we can. Sometimes it's every week. Sometimes it's every other week. But we put out the show when possible.
Sometimes it's once a month.
we've been pretty consistent overall, but with me away traveling and then Dave having stuff to do, it's been a little bit off this past couple weeks. Nonetheless, thankfully, we have a bunch of shows that we can always fill in the holes with. We do have a few questions, but guys, we could use a lot more. So
before we get into that, there is a little bit I want to talk about, but finish off what you're doing.
Sure thing. If you have not joined the group yet, I've been getting questions on DM and stuff. It's hard for me to keep track of all that stuff. If I get two of them at Instagram and then two of them on the Facebook and then two of them on the Advices Radio Instagram, it's like it's hard for me to keep track of all that stuff. That's why we have a Facebook group. It's just for Advices Radio. It's private. Ask to join over there. We'll accept you. And then anybody who wants to ask any questions, we've got threads that we've been putting up over there. Or you can just make a post out in the open and we'll be more likely to be able to get your questions together. So I wanted to throw that out there. If you haven't joined the group, please do. What's up, Dave? What were you thinking?
I've seen a couple this week, and it's not the first time it's cropped up. Is people getting aberrant blood results. So they get blood results and things aren't quite right.
Okay.
Particularly when we look at around liver or kidney function.
Okay.
So they then decide they're going to lower their protein intake and they're going to massively increase their hydration.
Okay.
And they're going to come off gear or drop down to a cruise or whatever it is. And that's all well and good. and that will help improve the results. But it's a bit pointless if then when your results come back down to within range, you then decide to go back on cycle, drop your water, and shove your protein through the roof.
Sure, sure.
Because you've artificially lowered them. That's not a reflection of your normal behavior.
Yeah.
So if you adopt a change in lifestyle to change your blood results in any way, that change in lifestyle should be sustained. And if that means facing the prospect that you can no longer train like you used to, or you can no longer use gear like you used to, because you can guarantee when people go back to the previous behavior that caused the problem in the first place, the problem's going to be back.
Yeah.
But because they've artificially created a set of good results, they tend then not to be so conscious about testing on a regular basis because they don't feel they need to monitor it because the last bloods came back brilliantly.
Yeah.
Well, they came back brilliantly because you manipulated the results.
Now, let me ask you, though, Dave, where do we draw that line? Because, you know, a lot of times as a bodybuilder, we look at something like you mentioned, kidneys, and you can look at those readings and like BUN will be elevated. Creatinine can be elevated. You know, how do we know what a problem is
the easiest guideline is EGFR. All right. Now, it is an estimated glomeruli filtration rate, and it's based on creatine and hydration and all these sort of things.
Yeah.
But if your GFR is sitting at 40s, which is substantially low on cycle, and you come off cycle and you get it back into the 60s, which is lower threshold in the UK, is 60. And you get it back into the 60 because you've dramatically reduced your protein intake down to, say, 100 grams a day.
Okay.
And you've put your hydration up to, say, 9 liters a day, which is massively high. And that gives you a reflected result. That's not a reflection of your kidney function based on how you live your life if you're not going to sustain that 100 grams of protein a day and that 9 liters of water a day. Hmm. So I appreciate that initially to get the reading where you want it, you can make these adaptations. Then if you're going to go back to your previous behavior, you need to again monitor where they are before you start banging a cycle on top.
Yeah.
So you bring your hydration down to what you know is what you're really going to sustain, say 5 liters a day, 4 liters a day, whatever it actually is. You take your protein back up to where it is, and then you look at your kidney function because that's your normal behavior. There's no point creating artificial results just to placate your brain if those conditions are not going to be sustained. I could get my kidney function up probably another 10 points if I severely reduce my protein intake and if I massively increase my water intake.
Yeah.
But it's bullshit because that isn't how I'm going to live my life. And so it's an artificial reading. It's a falsely manipulated reading in a positive manner. It's not a true reflection of what's happening in my kidneys.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've had issues with liver or kidneys whilst on cycle and you come off cycle and you make lifestyle changes and those results improve, if you intend to go back on cycle and that includes the changes in your diet and other things, make the dietary changes first. Then see if that impacts your results before you then add drugs in. And just because you've got your levels back down because you've been very, very careful to create a scenario that gives you a false reading, then it doesn't give you that. You then still need to monitor it if you go back to that previously damaging behavior.
Yeah.
But a lot of people will make changes to their lifestyle just until the point of when they get a decent set of results.
And then stop there. I could see that.
Sure. And then stop that. And it's the same on the opposite, in that if you have very poor hydration, you might see what would appear to be kidney problems.
Mm-hmm.
So before you jump to the conclusion that your kidneys are wrecked,
yeah,
get your hydration back into where it should be, and then have a look at your results and see what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So it works both ways. But I do see a lot of people literally manipulating so that they get the favorable blood results, so effectively they can justify going back on. Mm. Because they don't want to face the potential that they've done permanent damage. Now, kidneys don't recover.
Right.
So you've got, but you've got two types of sort of kidney damage. You've got actual kidney damage, which is what I've got, and you've got acute kidney injury or acute kidney stress. Kidney injury, kidney stress is a temporary thing brought on by environment, be that drugs or lifestyle.
Okay.
But damage, that's a permanent thing. Now you can take the pressure off a damaged kidney so it isn't as stressed, yes, but you won't reverse the damage.
Okay. What do you mean by take the pressure off?
Well, part of what, when a kidney is damaged, particularly if it's like FSGS, it's got little mini tears throughout it.
Okay.
And it leaks protein. Because the protein is quite large, as it passes through, it can do further damage.
I see.
So if you reduce protein intake, you don't have as much large particles passing through, and therefore you don't. I mean, it's like my, one of the things you'll see if you're leaking protein is you'll see it in your urine, and that's very, very easy to test with a dipstick. Hmm. Now, the one thing I've managed to do now is have my protein intake at such a level where I don't leak protein anymore.
Okay.
So there's no protein in my urine. Well, it's normal levels. So I know that my kidneys are now not being overly stressed by my diet.
Okay. So leaking protein, is that something that's going to happen to anybody who has a high protein diet? Or is it something that's going to happen just if you have damage?
It's only going to happen. Generally speaking, it will only happen if your kidneys are struggling.
Okay. Okay.
But people just need to, you know, if you've got problems in your bloods, address the problems, but then don't think because you've addressed those problems that it's safe to go back to your previous behavior.
Yeah.
Because you're just going to create those problems again, but now you're not watching them. You're not aware of them because you think you've had the all clear. Mm. And with liver, your liver's going to bounce back. Give it enough time, it will bounce back.
Yeah.
And most other stuff will sort themselves to some degree. In fact, they're now starting to say a lot with cardiology that if the heart changes are drug-induced, they should reverse themselves if you stop using drugs and focus on cardiovascular activity.
Really? Okay. Interesting.
Because muscles waste when they're inactive.
Yeah.
So if you've not got the sustained blood pressure from the gear and you've not got the gear affecting the myocardium, it should revert back. Maybe not 100%, but you would lose a large percentage of the damage that you've done. But kidneys don't do that. That's the one organ that once it's damaged, it stays.
Can you talk about fasted blood sugars? You know, I'm talking to a gentleman right now that he's finding that his fasted blood sugar, I think it was like 110 or something like that. So it's a little bit on the high end. You know, I think for us, I think 99 is the top end of normal. Anything above that is considered to be unhealthy. You know, what would you suggest there? I mean, one thing I know he's doing is he's using growth, but it's only at a couple units. So,
well, growth is going to cause that straight away.
Okay.
Because growth is going to make you insulin resistant.
It's interesting how growth hormone can make you insulin resistant, yet at the same time, it could be beneficial for fat loss.
Yeah, I know. It's ironic almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
Growth and insulin have a very sort of agonistic, antagonistic relationship depending on the timings.
Yeah.
But growth hormone will cause insulin resistance.
What are your thoughts overall now? I know that you know, we've talked in the past, and I know that we've been getting some new viewers here, so maybe we should touch on it a little bit. You know, we've been talking a lot lately on the channel about adding massive amounts of muscle. We just had Gary Turner on, who is at like 292 pounds. He's pushing, you know, and he'll probably break 300 during this off season. And, you know, he's staying pretty tight too. You know, one of his thoughts was that people are really overdoing the drugs. And if you rely on that, then you're not going to have room to really push up where you need to, you know, later.
I agree.
You're already going to hit a ceiling. Tell us a little bit about your growth hormone thoughts. I mean, you're a guy who's pushed up to over 400 pounds. Where did growth play a role in that? And I know we're being redundant here, that we've talked about this before, but like I said, we've got a bunch of new viewers.
Well, it didn't really.
Okay.
I mean, my first push put me at 365 in what I would regard as very reasonable condition for the weight.
Okay.
I still had the outside line of my core of abs visible, not individual abs, but the outside block was there. I still had separation in my arms. Not bad vascularity in arms, shoulders, calves. I did hold quite a bit of water, but at that time I was already starting to have kidney problems, but I didn't know. So I was constantly fighting with this water issue. And then I pushed on the 415. And to get to 415, I added insulin and growth.
Okay.
And so on the surface of that, you start thinking, well, hang on a minute, it's the insulin and growth that caused the extra growth. Well, all that actually happened was I shoved an absolute insane amount of water and glycogen into my muscle.
Okay.
When I stopped the insulin and growth, within 7 days, I was 55 pounds lighter.
55? I didn't realize it was that much.
Yes, 55 pound lighter.
So it wasn't a legit 415, is what you're telling me.
No, and it wasn't, but... And I've spoke to a few pros at length about this, and Luke agrees with me in that he doesn't think there's any growth benefit to using growth hormone from a point of view of muscular growth, and the same with insulin. But he says when you're a bodybuilder as a profession, being able to walk around 25 pounds fuller is advantageous when it comes to business.
Yeah, I could see that, sure.
And I do think that some of the complaints we hear now about pro bodybuilders not really coming on stage gnarly is because they use insulin and growth manipulation to fill that muscle with as much glycogen and water as possible,
causing it
to be artificially large, because at the end of the day, bodybuilding is about image. Yeah. It's the visual appearance. I mean, we all know a large number of top pros will use Synthol, maybe only small amounts just to pull out details here and there, maybe bring a rear delt up a little bit to balance with a medial delt, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But it's all about creating that image for when they stand on stage. So, you know, it has its uses in that element, but as a growth factor, it's shit. And it's been very much supported with science now as well, that hyperplasia, which we thought growth hormone caused, which was the addition of new muscle cells, we now know it doesn't sustain that. It has a very short-term impact to begin with, and then it just goes.
I didn't know that.
Performance studies have also shown that growth hormone actually reduces athletic performance.
Really? I didn't know this either.
But it is good at recovery. It is good at cellular rejuvenation. It is good at improving our sleep quality. It is an effective fat burner.
Yeah.
So I think with all drugs, and this is where we've gone wrong, is as a community in usage, we've always gone for, well, if one is good, 10 must be fucking awesome.
Right.
And if 500 mg works this well, then a fucking gram's going to be phenomenal. And if a gram's phenomenal, then 3 grams going to be outstanding.
Yeah.
And also the fact that you go back 20 years, the people involved in bodybuilding were all hardcore trainers. Now with its vast, you know, popularity, a lot of people involved in bodybuilding wouldn't have been there 20 years ago, 30 years ago, because they didn't have the fast access to drugs. So they wouldn't have sustained the training, because they wouldn't have got the results, because their approach to training and their baseline mental approach to performance just isn't there.
Yeah.
And that's not a criticism or an insult. It's just a reality. I can't fucking sing. I never will be able to. My genetics just don't put me in that position. You know, I'll never run a marathon. And it's just, you know, certain people just aren't designed to do certain things. But access to drugs has allowed a much broader spectrum of competitors to be able to compete. And we've just pushed more and more and more. When in fact, the balance to making fantastic progress is actually lower amounts, but timed and used correctly in balance. So, if you're going to use growth hormone, a small amount evening every other day. You're not going to get the same insulin resistance because you take a day off in between. You're still going to get the recovery benefits. You're not going to get the massive water retention. That's not going to put pressure on your cardiovascular or your blood pressure or your heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll get that benefit of the youth effect that growth hormone has.
Okay.
Insulin. Large amounts for growth, waste of fucking time. Yeah, you'll get shitloads of glycogen and water into the muscle again, but you're not getting muscle growth.
Yeah.
But small amounts, because you're now pushing huge amounts of food, right, which is causing your glucose levels to go higher and causing your own beta cells to become slightly insensitive.
Right.
A small amount of insulin with those meals will protect the beta cells, give them a bit of respite, and allow your body to work and utilize that food more efficiently.
Absolutely.
Go too far with that, and you'll absolutely destroy insulin sensitivity and put yourself in a worse position when you finish using the growth.
Yeah.
So it's small amounts used correctly and frequently that actually build these monster physiques. It's not massive amounts.
I think more people are figuring that out. I think more are now than in the past. We used to follow the old Milos plan of, you know, a blast of
120 IU a slin a day.
Yeah, a lot, you know. Yeah. And didn't you have a conversation with Milos before about insulin?
I followed his protocol until the point when I realized this shit ain't working.
Okay. What were you seeing out of it? I mean, obviously you were seeing, a lot of retention in the muscle and probably outside of the muscle as well. Were you seeing a lot of fat gain, or in how long of a period was this?
No, I thought it was fat gain initially. Okay. I realized it wasn't when I dropped all the water. Because when I dropped all the water, I was 350 pounds with visible abs. Not full, but I could actually see the difference. Yeah. I've got a picture on my phone somewhere. But what I discovered with it was is that what happened, and this was brought on by my kidneys, actually. Because my kidneys were struggling to sustain high levels of albumin in my blood, water was struggling to bind with the albumin because it wasn't there. So water wouldn't sit in my bloodstream, and it was seeping out under the skin into my dermis.
Okay.
So I had to use huge amounts of sodium to draw the water through into the muscle with the glycogen.
Okay.
And what I found was when it didn't work, I literally looked like I'd gained 30 pounds, 40 pounds of fat.
Oh, my gosh.
And then when it did work and the salt balance was right, which was really tricky to manage because of the size I was and the huge amounts of food and fluid I was taking on board, I looked phenomenally different. I remember manipulating the water in a positive way, getting it, just hitting it bang on for about 36 hours and putting over an inch on each of my arms.
No kidding.
And it was just the water going in, fully hydrating the muscle and the muscle swelling.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's but the proof was, I mean, I bust my balls every time I trained back then. There was no, you know, even my shitty workouts were still fairly intense.
Yeah.
And I was using more than enough food and more than enough drugs to grow. And yet at the end of that period, I lost 10 pounds.
Really?
Off my net start weight.
How, and what was it? 10 pounds of what?
Well, there was an element of water in there, but what I hadn't done is definitely not gained any muscle.
Okay. Huh.
I started at 365 and ended at 355.
Oh my gosh.
But potentially I was leaner at the end, without a doubt. And that was the other thing, because you can't work out what's water, what's fat, where the water's gone, I started to be over-restrictive with my calories.
Okay.
So that whole second project of UC2, even though I do hit the 415 pounds, it's a bit of a con, really. And I don't mean in the film. I mean, it was a bit of a con in, to myself.
Mm.
I mean, I was disappointed when I reached that milestone because it wasn't what I'd envisaged it to be in the way of how I looked.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until after everything and I sat and looked back and analyzed what had gone on that I realized that actually – that second huge cycle, I didn't progress in at all. And actually, my strength was less at the end of that than it was at the beginning of that.
Really?
So I do think people ask what the secret to growth is. It's consistency. It's food. more than probably anything, it's hard, effective training. And then you just need a sprinkling of drugs. Growth has its place, but it's only small amounts. It isn't the wonder drug. And this is the other thing. You know as well as I do, you've only got to spend 15 minutes online, on the forums or on Facebook pages, to see the amount of 150-pound blokes that are running shitloads of insulin and shitloads of growth.
Absolutely,
If these were the muscle miracle builders they were, then why aren't these guys a year later 30, 40-pound heavier?
That's a very good point,
Because they'll say, I gained 30 pounds when I used it. All right, and what way do I? Oh, well, I'm 30 pounds or 40 pounds lighter. Well, how have you lost 30 pounds of muscle?
That's a very good point, isn't it?
I eat like shit. I hardly ever walk in a gym. And I still walk around at 350 pounds. I can't get rid of it, even when I try.
Yeah. Are you at a 350 again now?
I've come back down a little bit. I think I'm back down to about 342 or something. It's hardly worth fucking talking about, is it? But, you know, it's, and this is the point. If these drugs were so phenomenally good at building muscle, the huge amount of people that are using them, we'd be seeing a lot more mass monsters appearing.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Hey guys, let's take just a really quick pause from this episode of Drugs and Stuff so we can shout out our sponsor and a couple other little odds and ends. So number one, TrueNutrition.com. Guys, I'm really grateful that we can be a part of supporting TrueNutrition.com. They're a company that I truly do believe in. They've been around since I began competing. I use them all through my contest preps. I suggest them to my clients. It's a company that I truly do trust. They make great products and they try to keep their prices as affordable as possible. You guys can get some additional savings from those affordable prices by using our codes. Plus the codes let True Nutrition know that you support what we're doing. Our codes are Advices and Advices Oats. I mean, they have a ton of different protein powders, everything from whey hydro to iso to casein to pea protein isolate, egg protein. It goes on and on. So definitely check them out. They have a protein for everyone, a mix for everyone, and they have a flavor for everyone. They have a ton of different flavors as well as health supplements. I use a lot of their NO products like their beta alanine and their citrulline malate. I'm using their oatmeal right now. I use a cup of that before I train. I'm using the old fashioned oatmeal cookie flavor. Before that, I had the pancakes and syrup. I'm going to try the mom's apple pie next. And so far, I've been having a lot of fun. It's a little bit more money than to buy just like cheap, plain, boring oats. But like really splitting the difference, it's not really much more expensive. And I feel like it's honestly added value to my life because I enjoy my meal more and I'm getting great pumps in the gym too. So it's a win, 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 guys. And while I've got you, two more notes, Dave Crossland. Guys, I want you to reach out to Dave if you're interested in working with him. You know, he's a guy who considers himself an off-season specialist, a muscle growth specialist, and for good reason. That's where his passion is, and that's like what we talk about here on this episode and all the shows, you know, that we do for Drugs and Stuff. You can reach out to Dave over at crosslands.org.uk, or you can hit him up on Facebook, talk about his programming, his plans, and see if you guys would be a good fit. Dave's a cool guy. He's really passionate about what he's doing. I'm really grateful that we can have him here. I feel entertained and I learn something too every episode that we do. It's been really cool getting to know Dave and becoming his friend, and I'm grateful that we can share this stuff with you guys too. And lastly, if you guys haven't gone over to Think Big Bodybuilding Media on YouTube, I strongly encourage you to do so. Please subscribe over there. And if you're into the YouTube thing, then, you know, follow along. And every like is much appreciated. You know, we're trying to build that thing out now. And we've been doing these audio podcasts, as you guys know, for years. And I want to be able to stay on top of things and keep this show rolling as long as we can. And I felt like that was the next logical step. So thank you to everybody who has been supporting us over there. And thank you guys for going over to check it out. All right, let's get back to this episode of Drugs and Stuff. Thanks for listening to the commercials.
Unfortunately, I think, you know, what we've been seeing, and I know, you know, Dave, you work with people with harm prevention and you try to help people that have gotten themselves into trouble. My girlfriend does the same thing. You know, and I see people that run into issues. I feel like there is more and more health issues that have been happening in the last few years that I've seen. People who really don't have the business. And I, you know, I don't think I'm saying anything new here, anything that's going to surprise anybody. But, you know, there does seem to be more issues out there and more side effects, just more side effects and way more side effects than there needs to be. And I don't want to get on like a big soapbox with that. But yeah, I feel like, you know, I can think of one guy in particular that I work with. He'll probably be listening to this. But when we met, he was running a ton of stuff. And it was always one issue after the next. There was something that would hold him back. And he's a guy who's pushing. He could be 300 pounds. There's no question in my mind that this guy could bring up a few body parts that he needs to. There's no question in my mind. But, you know, he runs hard gear and then he runs into a problem with estrogen or he runs into another problem. So it's these two steps forward and then he takes two steps back. And then in that meantime, it's just like you're spinning your wheels constantly versus now we've worked together long enough where he's listening. We got him basically off everything. He's made the best progress in his, like, since I've worked with him now, just on TRT levels. Like, I almost don't want to add anything back in just because it's better now. He looks better. You know the look too, Dave? Like, when somebody's been on drugs a long time, they get an unhealthy look to their skin. Like, just the appearance somebody has. You could tell when somebody's on a lot of gear, and it's not, like, a positive thing, you know?
The biggest killer of growth is stress. And I'm not talking about your missus giving you a hard time because you left your underpants on the landing.
Yeah,
I'm talking about bodily stress, chemically induced stress, lifestyle induced stress.
Yeah.
Luke Sandow actually put a picture up today, and it was him just before the Arnold's.
Okay.
And he said it was the best he'd ever looked. Hmm. I know he wasn't happy about how he looked at the Olympia. And he said it was the least stressful prep he'd had. And he started from the most relaxed position he'd ever started from.
Yeah.
And what people don't realize is drug stress is a massive negative to growth.
Sure, absolutely, man.
And the healthier you can be, the less stressed you are, the less your central nervous system is stressed because of the chemicals you're running, the less your stomach is stressed because of the chemicals you're running, your liver and kidneys aren't stressed because of the chemicals you're running, the better you will grow.
Yeah.
The more stressed you get, the more your body has to divert energy to preserving the health of those areas and fighting off that stress, and you don't grow.
Yeah.
And if you want to put this in something that people may have actually experienced,
yeah,
you start a cycle, everything's going really well, you're progressing week on week, and then all of a sudden, you get a niggle, you feel a bit run down, you get a cold, you're not sleeping just as well as you were, and you're progressing in the gym slows.
Yeah.
That's the point where your body has become too toxic to progress.
Sure, I can see that.
So at that point, you either lower the dose significantly or you stop your cycle, let your body recover, and then move on again. But people get so determined, and I've been the same, that when they start a cycle, they must see it to the end.
Yeah.
But when you get to a point where progression is not happening and appetite's gone out the window and diet's gone to shit in the sense of how it feels or how your stomach's working, then what's the point?
Yeah.
You better dial it back, get fresher, and go again. And if that means for you, I work with a client that couldn't really handle more than 6 weeks on.
Okay, fair enough. But hey, if you can make progress in 6 weeks and stay healthy and feel good and hold that, right?
Yeah.
Then you're going to make more benefit than, yeah, you know, and that's one of the reasons too. I feel like something I remember, Dave, when I first started going on the message boards, reading about gear, you know, when I was educating myself, but through reading everybody else's posts, you would see these cycles that were laid out week 1 through 12, you know, and then during week 6 through 8, we do this. And, you know, week 1 through 4, we do this. I don't like those ideas anymore. And that I'm not so fond of just like writing something out and saying that you follow this to a T, just like training. You know what I mean? It's like, here's a template. Here's an idea. Here's a rough place to start. I can tell you how to drive to the mall, but I can't tell you what lanes to take to get there. You know, it's going to be an individual situation based off of just experience, right? And what comes up along the way. So
it's got to be adaptive. Yes, it has to be adaptive. And none of us are lucky enough, or the vast majority of us are not lucky enough to be able to dedicate our whole lives to our training. Yeah. We have jobs, we have families. So things crop up. Illnesses crop up. Kids bring shit from school home that's lurgies and weird bugs and fucking God knows what else. And
you say lurgies?
Anyone who's lurgies, the lurgy, yeah.
What's a lurgy? I never heard of that before.
It's an illness.
Lurgy, huh? Lurgy.
You've learned a new British word.
Lurgy.
So, but, you know, our kids bring stuff home. That affects us. There's all sorts of shit going on.
Yeah.
And you've just, like you say, you've got to be adaptive and you've got to be self-analytical. And that's the bit that people struggle with.
Yeah.
People struggle coming off gear. People struggle to be self-analytical and honest about their progress. And I mean, it's very simple to do. Take a picture of yourself now, weigh yourself, do your measurements, and you can look back 12 months previously and say, right, what did I weigh? What did I look like? Have I improved in those 12 months and by how much by?
Yeah.
And if you're seeing 5 pounds, 4 pounds, then chances are, particularly if you've done two or three cycles in that time, something's not working right. You know, but what we do is we judge our progression on the individual cycle we're doing. So, well, I've put 15 pounds, I've put 20 pounds on this cycle, but don't look to the results of the previous cycles. Well, yeah, so what do you weigh now? Well, I weigh 210. All right, what did you weigh this time last year when you finished your cycle? 210.
Yeah.
There's no linear progression. And they just go over the same shit over and over again, making the same mistakes. And, you know, there's no escaping. These drugs aren't safe. And this is why we're seeing this increase in problems.
Yeah.
Heart attacks are becoming more and more common. Mm. Kidney problems are becoming more common. And just lately, what I've seen is a spike in actual muscle detachments.
Mm.
Because people are using so many drugs, they're getting, the muscles are getting much stronger than the tendons can cope with, and they form shit. And they end up damaging themselves. It's growing all the time is the number of people that are having issues. And this is just physical issues. This isn't even looking at mental issues.
That's a whole other story. That's a whole other topic right there.
That's three episodes on its own.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I've watched relationships go down the toilet online by the way one of the parties behaving.
Yeah.
Because of their change in priorities over their drug use and their physique.
Yeah.
And you see people literally destroy themselves emotionally and relationship-wise because they just can't step away.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one very simple rule to life that I like to follow. One is honesty. And that's about not just being honest with the people around you, but being honest with yourself. And two is, if there's anything in your life you can't put down and walk away from, then your relationship with that is unhealthy.
Hmm.
My relationship with work is unhealthy.
Hmm.
I know that. I try to manage it, but I'm aware that I spend too much time working. And I have a massive guilt complex if I'm not working.
Hmm.
I'm all right if I go away on holiday, but if I'm at home, even if it's a Sunday, I'm starting to pick my phone up and answering questions from clients and dealing with people that, you know, because I feel guilty if I'm not being productive.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're an overachiever for sure. And you're driven. I think a lot of us could probably relate to the way you feel and what you're talking about right now.
But it goes into all aspects. You know, if you can't go a day without putting a selfie up, and I mean, I can give you a list as long as you are of fucking people that have that problem. You know, when you're recording every single thing, yeah, exactly, every single thing you're doing, and that's not because that's business orientated. It's not because you've got a blog with a lot of followers or whatever that earns you a living. It's like, why? Why do you have to? Because no one really gives a shit. And all you're actually doing is hunting for likes.
Yeah. Yeah, you do have to ask that question, the why. There's a couple of documentaries I've seen about that on like the social media and Instagram phenomenon on what was it, on Netflix. I watched one of them, man. It's interesting. It's interesting how fast somebody can become popular, and then it's also interesting how fast that can be taken away, and yeah. what happens to that person then after that ends.
I mean, I remember at certain stages of what I've been doing and what I've done. Obviously, self-promotion is part of it because you're promoting yourself because it's your business. It's how you develop your business.
Yeah.
But I do remember posting pictures and then literally refresh. How many likes? How many comments? Refresh. And I'm starting to think, what the fuck am I doing?
Mm.
It'll still be there in an hour, 2 hours' time.
Yeah.
Why the fuck am I constantly on this phone paranoid about people's comments about a picture I put up? These are people I don't even fucking know, and I don't, to be fair, even fucking care about.
Yeah.
So why am I so interested in their comment?
That's a good point.
But Facebook gets like that. Social media is very addictive that way. And I mean, I've seen interviews with people that, you know, have selfie problems, and they literally cry themselves to sleep if they haven't got a certain number of likes off a picture and stuff like that.
God.
It can be that damaging. But if you're like me, which is a bit of a weird fucking social media stalker, and you just sit and watch people, you'll see how they change as they're lifting or they're training and their drug use move forward. And what you'll also see is you'll see a change in the quality of their content they put out. It'll become more diluted. But you'll also see them starting to post about more problems they're having. This is an issue, that's an issue, this is a shit day, that's a shit. And it's like, well, you were never like this before. What's changed? And it's just, you know, social media can be a very useful tool for connecting people and an excellent business tool. But it can also be an incredibly damaging thing. And in the same way, so can drug use and pursuit of that perfect physique. A lot of people think that if they achieve a certain physical goal, it's going to make their life. And they'll start to push people around them away to achieve that physical goal, because the more they focus on themselves and achieving that physical goal, the more self-centered they get, the less space there is for other people.
Yeah.
And so they end up on their own, outside of a relationship, get to the end of it, and then actually find that they're actually very empty and their lives are very empty because they focus so much on this container, which is their body, they forgot to focus on what goes in it. And they've just got nothing.
Well, anything, if you get too one-dimensional with anything, I think that, you know, you can end up feeling kind of empty at the end if you're not a well-rounded person. Listen, Dave, I'm going to go to our questions real quick here, see if we can tackle a couple of these. This one is from a little while ago now, but I think it's something that, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about. And it was something I just dug up on DM. Like I said, I'm terrible at answering questions on DM for the shows. If it's something like, you know, somebody just asked me randomly and I'm going to respond there, got it. But when we're trying to organize the shows, that's why we suggest you guys go over to the new Facebook group. I know Facebook isn't as popular as it used to be, but it's a great place to have a group and to be able to gather our questions up. Anyway, he says, hey, I'm a longtime listener of the shows on Advices and Bodybuilding Nerds, and I think I have a question for one of the shows. He says, I'm starting a bulk, and my coach wants me to take 600 milligrams of test, 75 milligrams of tren, and he doesn't say how often on the tren. Maybe every night. And T3 at 12.5 micrograms every night. I've never heard of T3 in a bulk, and I'm wondering what you guys have to say about this.
Get a new coach.
T3 every night, not a T3. What's the issue here? The T3 or the tren or which?
Both.
Why not the tren in your bulk?
Side effects of tren: anxiety, poor sleep, stomach acid, digestion problems. What's the two things you need in an off season to grow?
Sleep and digestion.
sleep and digestion.
Fair enough. And stress, low stress, like you were saying earlier.
Low stress.
So
why? Tren is a very powerful compound, and it has its place. I do not see any benefit to using Tren off-season. And for me, if someone is using Tren off-season, I would start to question their work ethic. Because why are you using the most powerful drug in our arsenal and the most toxic drug in our arsenal in a period of time when your food's going to be high, your rest is going to be high, and your recovery should be the easiest it's going to be? Because when you get into comp season, your food's low, your recovery's shit, and you're struggling and you're pushing hard. So to me, off-season needs to be as low impacting from a point of view of toxicity and stress as it can be, which is why my favorite and why old school, the favorite compounds are Test and Deca.
Okay.
Deca's an anti-inflammatory. It's very low impact on our central nervous systems and stress levels in our body.
Now, I know you were eating 2 cups of rice every hour with chicken during your bulk. Every hour you were awake. Deca and Test, was that your jam at the time then?
Yeah.
Okay. Had you ever run Tren in an off season?
Yes. I tolerate it actually incredibly well.
Okay.
There is a possibility that the Tren played a massive role in what finally gave my kidneys a kick in the ass.
Oh, okay.
There are a few studies that suggest that Tren is directly toxic to the kidneys. They're not really confirmed, but there are several case studies about acute kidney injury in Trenbolone users. So I can't say factually whether it did or didn't.
Yeah.
But I noticed the difference in stress and general well-being when I ran Deca as opposed to when I ran Tren.
Okay.
And I was running high doses, but I still noticed a distinct change in my well-being, both mentally and physically.
Okay.
And people go for drugs. It's all the time you hear it. What's the strongest drug? What's the strongest this? You know, oh, well, I'm going to look at Ment, or I'm going to look at DHB, or I'm going to look at Tren because they're the three big powerful ones. And it's like, well, if that's your approach to drug use, you need to give yourself a fucking slap. Because that isn't how you grow, taking the most toxic chemicals on the planet.
Yeah,
it's as simple as this. The stronger it is, the more stress it's going to cause.
Yeah, there's nothing magic. You know, I was talking to somebody at the Olympia who is an elite level power lifter. And we were talking about, you know, he said he loved Tren. He loved the effect of Tren, but he can't deal with the side effects. He was hoping that Ment would be the answer because it's strong, but it doesn't have those side effects. He said, but I just don't get the same effect out of it. I think it's a 1-to-1 ratio, you know. If you're getting those great effects, if you're getting that like insane strength, that's, you're also going to get, you know, the other things that go along with that central nervous system stimulation, you know, insomnia and everything else.
Which is why you need to time your drug use.
Yeah.
So as a powerlifter, Tren would come in 6, 5, 4 weeks out.
Yeah.
Because you'd get away with the toxicity not being super stupid high at the point you peak for the show. Where if you ran it from 12, 16 weeks out, you'd probably get 6 weeks out and be absolutely fucked.
Right.
You know, you can pump a poison into your body for so long, it will tolerate it for so long, but it becomes a breaking point. And people just aren't looking at drugs from the point of view of their toxicity and how that negatively impacts growth. They just look at drugs from the point of view of, is it strong? Will it make me massive?
Yeah.
And yet the vast majority of people that advocate huge Tren use aren't big.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, I got one more here. We actually had a couple more, but we'll just end it at these two. Odd question. He said, I've read that taking over 600 milligrams of Test is pointless and that you start to get diminishing returns. Then I see guys doing 1,200 milligrams and above. Is there a point in going above 600? And is it worth it?
Right. It's you do get diminishing returns because the linear graph of dose towards performance is not equal in that sense.
Yeah.
So if this was performance and this was dose, if we doubled the dose, we wouldn't get double the performance.
And it's going to be, I found that's going to be individual with everybody, right?
It is. And part of that problem is what we've been talking about all night, is the toxicity buildup. Because as you increase the dose, you increase the stress on the body, which has a negative impact on the performance.
Okay.
The other aspect is that our bottleneck for growth is actually our stomachs. Because we can only grow with the raw materials we provide. Mm. And if we can't push enough food into our bodies to grow, then it doesn't matter how many drugs we take, we're never going to get a sustained muscle growth.
Yeah.
And if you keep pushing the drugs higher, you start to affect the liver, which in turn starts to affect the gut health. And the result is then you can't utilize the food you're eating. You get loads of bloat and you're just wasting the food. So you haven't got the building blocks for growth. And so then in turn, you haven't got the drugs, the use out of the drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go high dose and still get effective results, but it's very person dependent.
Yeah. Cause I found that like when I pushed gear more, when I was, you know, trying to really grow that at that time, I found that anything like my, and this is interesting because this is a unique thing. You know, a lot of times you hear people's libido increases when you increase test. I found that was true. But when I went above 750, then I found the opposite effect would start happening. My blood work wouldn't say why. Everything looked fine. You know, SHBG and prolactin and progesterone, everything, you know, estrogen, everything was in a good place. But just the test being in that higher range, it had a negative effect on me. But if I stayed below that, I was kind of like in a sweet spot. And not just libido, but then just overall feeling good. At the same time, I've known guys that can only handle a small, small amount before they start getting issues and becoming uncomfortable. You know, we're talking under, I know one guy under 500 milligrams. So,
well, the guy I referenced earlier on, he can only stay on cycle 6 weeks and he can only run doses of around 400-600 milligrams.
Okay.
I did 3 gram a test for 16 weeks and still felt pretty decent at the end of it.
Yeah. That's just so much oil, man.
I know. Don't get me wrong. I know the point where I started to tip over the other way.
Okay, yeah.
And I have a very good capacity to force feed.
Yeah, you do.
Doesn't bother me. Yeah, it doesn't bother me. So I was still getting the food in. I was still managing to eat. I was still moving forward. But I know the point where things started to tip.
Yeah.
And for me, the first indicators were performance in the gym.
Hmm.
Your performance, your edge goes and that enthusiasm goes and you're just not seeing that same freshness in your lifting.
Yeah.
But it all depends as well. I mean, before that, I'd had quite a bit of time off. I'd been on very long cut diet prior to that. My cardiovascular levels were very, very high. I was actually quite fit. And that's a large percentage of why I tolerated that dose for so long.
Yeah.
I would suspect that if I went into it off a shorter break, not being so cardiovascular, not being so lean, my tolerance would have probably been 10 weeks, 12 weeks. Everybody's different. And this is where it comes back to being honest. You've just got to be self-analytical and say, well, you know, my strength's not gone up in the last 3 weeks.
Hmm.
You can literally get stronger every fucking session on cycle if everything is on point. I don't think people realize how much you can actually achieve. So they accept mediocre results and they accept, if I got 5 pounds in weight gain off a cycle, fucking hell, I'd be shooting myself. I'd be wanting my fucking money back.
You should be able to do that without the gear in 12 weeks, right?
It's, you know, you should be fucking moving at quite a good progression rate. Granted, I mean, I went from 300 to 365 in 7 months.
Yeah. That's a lot of weight.
Being honest, probably 20-25% of that was water and fat.
Okay.
So that's still 40 pounds of muscle.
You think it was real muscle, though? Because I feel like I don't know about growing 40 pounds of muscle in that period of time. I could see leaning toward more muscle, you know, growing. But to think 40 pounds of muscle, man, to think like I think of what like a 1 pound brick of beef looks like. And I think 40 of those in what period of time?
7 months.
7 months? That's a lot, man. That's a lot.
All right, well, my chest went from 56 to 72.
That's a lot of chest.
My shoulder circumference was in excess of 80-odd inches.
Was that for under construction one?
That was the first one.
That was the first one. And then
my arm, I gained 4.5 inches on my arms, 4 inches on my arms.
Yeah, that's a lot. And I guess, you know, there's going to be an equation, too, with your height. So that's part of it. Like me putting on 40 pounds at 5'7 is going to be different than you. So that may be more like me putting on 20. But even 20, man, that just seems like a lot. It's a good amount of time, too. So I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot of food you can handle, too. So I don't know, man. I just feel like I'm asking. I feel like people are going to have an issue with Dave Crossland said he gained 40 pounds of pure muscle, you know.
All right. I gained 25 and I gained 40 pounds of fat. What difference does it make? The point is, I think the problem as well with what the people have always struggled with me is they don't get a sense of how actual big I was from photographs.
They do when they see you standing next to Rich Piana.
That gives you a bit of an indication. That's Rich at his biggest.
Yeah.
And a prime example is I got an Explosive Ape t-shirt the other day, 5XL.
Okay.
And that's the biggest size they do.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're talking lifters like Eddie Hall and such like that are sponsored by them. That's the size of their clothing garments. At my biggest, I couldn't get one on.
Wow. They just had to get a tarp and just write the name of the company on it and then give that to you.
I had to get my jeans made. I had to get my shirts made. Clothing just wouldn't fit. I couldn't buy clothes to fit from anywhere.
That's crazy, man.
5XL and 6XL American size t-shirts were skin tight.
Jeez. That's funny.
And I think that never comes across in the pictures.
Yeah.
You know, and it's only when people meet me or have met me, they've gone, fuck.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you were actually that big.
And then how long was the phase between the period between under construction one and two?
16 months.
16 months. And so you held that size from that period of time till you went to under construction two.
Yeah.
We just had on Gary Turner for a segment that we call Huge as Fuck. He was talking about the key to bulking is getting up to X amount of pounds on your cycle. And then when you come off, take downtime. Don't let your body come down.
Yes.
His goal is to keep the body weight up. He said, you won't have the same composition, but you need to keep that body weight where it is.
You need 2-3 months for your body to accept that as being your mass.
Okay.
And one of the reasons I hold size now is because I've been big for so fucking long.
Yeah.
That it just, my body just sees this as normal.
Yeah.
What you do, my general line of thought is diet before a bulk, get as lean as you can.
Okay.
Do your bulk. At the end of the bulk, hold your food. And generally at this point is where you're going to get fat.
Yeah.
Is when you come off cycle. That because you're not going to, you still have the same calories going in, but you're not going to utilize them as effectively.
Yeah.
So your body's going to go into more storage than it is into utilization into the muscle. Hold that for a couple of months, maybe three, and then start your cut going into your next bulk.
Yeah, I can see that.
So you tidy yourself up before your next bulk, but what does everybody do? They bulk and straight away they're looking at going on a cut.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
I mean, all I can say is I started at 301 or 302 pound or whatever it fucking was. I can't remember. I ended at 365. Yeah. I have a picture from the beginning to a picture to the end. There is 64 pounds, 65 pounds difference between those two photographs. People can judge themselves if they think X amount is muscle or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
The dimensional growth was massive.
It sounds like it.
And it doesn't come across until I see odd pictures and I'm like, fucking hell, yeah, I really was big. you just don't see it.
And you don't have any interest anymore, huh? You're done with that.
Burnout.
Yeah.
I think it's probably, I had a goal. I didn't achieve that goal in the way I wanted to, but I did sort of achieve it. I think if, in retrospect, if I'd have stayed at 365,
yeah,
tidied up a little bit and marketed that physique, I would have probably done far better than I have from a physique point of view within the industry.
I bet, you know, it was a more like marketable look, I guess.
Yeah,
you
know? It was, and it was still very extreme.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, so I could have come down to 340 and been in very decent condition for somebody who's not competing,
right?
And being quite freaky, but my desires were more towards the harm reduction stuff, and that's the distance I've headed on. And the projects gave me a good springboard into that.
Yeah.
Maybe I could have turned that into a Rich Piana style industry if I'd have maintained that 340 to 360 pound look and been very self-marketing with that, but it just wasn't me. I mean, even now when I look in my phone, there's probably only about 15 pictures of me from that period of time.
Oh, really? No kidding.
I've got very few photographs, which is why you see the same ones regurgitated all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Because I just don't have any other ones.
Yeah.
You know, but I was more interested in what I do now. I find that much more rewarding.
I can tell you get a lot out of it too.
And to me, yeah, all right, it would be nice to earn Rich Piana sort of levels of money, but there's more to life than financial gain. You know, you need some sort of moral payment. Well, I do anyway. I need to feel that what I do is worthwhile.
Yeah, I can follow that.
And that's a great payment for me. That's probably, look, I'm not going to be a bullshitter. Do I value money? Yeah, of course I fucking do. Who doesn't, you know?
Right, right.
Do I want a nice house and a nice car and nice holidays? Yeah, duh. But I would have said the moral reward for doing what I do is just as important.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I probably wouldn't do this shit if it didn't pay.
Well, you got to have a calling in life, and I think that's what you found, you know?
I don't know.
All right. Well, let's get out of here, man. We've had a good time. We got a couple of questions answered. A lot of good information put out there. Once again, too, I'm sorry about your friend as well as your friend's daughter, man. And guys, I want you to head over to the Facebook page. We will... We'll post up a new thread for the next episode. Let's get a lot of good questions together for Dave. And for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, head over to crosslands.org.uk. You can reach out to Dave over there. And head over to our sponsor, truenutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES as well as our code ADVICESOATS. Dave, thank you as always, sir.
My pleasure.
Radio Network.